Thanks for joining in today on WPR News. It's a physical therapy day today. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us. And back to share their insights and advice are our two physical therapists, and they want to spend a little time talking about sitting on your butt. Jill Tynisbaum, professor of the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Jill, good to have you back.
It's great to be here. Good morning, everyone.
And good morning to you. And Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. And Lori, good to see you as well.
Awesome to be here on a rainy Monday. Glad for some rain.
I am as well. And as we talk with our two guest experts, I hope you'll join in. What physical therapy questions do you have? Join in. Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, or you could send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Well, we're sitting.
Oh, we are. And honestly, neither of us, any of us, really like to sit.
No, I like to get up and around.
Exactly.
Which is good. That's a really good habit to have, even if your job does require you to sit.
How much sitting is too much, do you think?
Wow.
There's a lot of people who want to answer that question. Mm-hmm. And the World Health Organization, for the first time in 2020, recommended reducing sedentary behaviors because of their negative health consequences, and that is sitting. And you think about how the world has changed, you know, in my lifetime, from work that required standing, moving, to work now so much of it is information-based. Uh-huh. Particularly in developed countries like ours. And we spend a lot of our time sitting.
Is it bad for us? Is sedentary behavior bad for you regardless of your age or your health or otherwise?
It tends to be across the board. It's bad for your health across the board. And one of the questions that people have been trying to answer is the question you asked at the beginning, how much is too much? And that's really hard to tease out because there are a number of factors that come into it. And one of them being, how much time do you spend in leisure activity to offset the amount of sitting you do? So you have how much sitting are you doing, and then how much activity do you do the rest of your day? And how intense is that activity? So what we know is that people who mostly sat at work, and this study was done in Taiwan, which was interesting because the demographics of this population are pretty different from people in the U.S. That is, they're generally healthier. Hmm. The percentage of people with a BMI over 30 in the study from Taiwan was 4%. The percentage of people in the U.S. with the BMI over 30 is 42.4%.
So almost half the population.
So you'd think then that the findings from the study that you're going to be telling us about would actually be worse
in the U.S.
Absolutely. In the U.S.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
So what they found is that people who mostly sat at work had a 16.16% higher all-cause mortality and a 34% increased risk of death from cardiovascular disease. And this was across the band of different activity levels, from low, medium, high leisure activity. All those activity levels did not offset people who mostly sat at work. Only when you got to the very high, the intense activity level, leisure time activity level, did it offset the mostly sitting at work. And in fact, it took approximately 4 to 5 times the World Health Organization of recommendation of exercise, which is 150 minutes per week, to offset prolonged sitting.
So that's I think that information is really telling. I think, as Lori referred to earlier, we talked about how there's so much more technology with jobs, how it's kind of pushing us into a sedentary behavior at work. And I think a lot of people think, well, you know, when I get home at the end of the day, I go for a walk or something like that. What this study is demonstrating is that unless you're doing very high vigorous activity, it's not going to be enough to offset the sedentary behavior of an 8-hour workday, which is done mostly sitting. And I think, as Lori alluded to, this is the first study that's really tried to control for all the other variables and identify the risk and how much activity is really required to offset that prolonged sitting.
Wow. I'm thinking about people.
Stand up right now, don't you, Larry?
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about myself sitting on the couch watching the U.S. Open for about 3 hours yesterday.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
would have been a lot better to be out there golfing yourself, right?
Yeah, well, I guess it would have been for sure. Well, so how worried do people? I also thought about people who were, for one physical reason or another, just can't get out and do the extreme amount of...
Right. And you don't have to. So if you... What the workplace needs to do is to create a structure where people can move a little bit more at work. So whether you get up and you walk to the break room to get another cup of coffee or a drink of water. Work needs to allow people to have the opportunity to get up and move throughout the day. You know, they also talk about sit to stand, like standing desks, and people mm-hmm. who worked at both sitting and standing did better in terms of their cardiovascular risk. It was fairly linear if you look at the data from mostly sitting to sitting standing to, you know, mostly standing kinds of activities. So if you can do some sitting and standing, that's better. If you can get up and stand and take a brief walk, that's better too. But the workplace demands that require people to sit for hours on end without a break, it's not sustainable in terms of population health and the costs to the society, to the individual and the family of the risk of this disease.
And it's interesting, this study looked at cardiovascular risks and morbidity and mortality, but one of the things that we always talk about as well is the musculoskeletal consequences of just sitting for a prolonged period of time. So this doesn't even scratch the surface on creation of back pain, things like that. And so I think there's more to it, the prolonged sitting, than just this study implicates.
So I've often heard the phrase, sitting is the new,
new smoking.
Yep. But the health risks of prolonged sitting and smoking, are they really comparable?
No. But in terms of the cost to the individual, the family, the workplace, and society are similar.
Okay.
And as Jill alluded to, it's not just the cardiovascular, the 34% increase in cardiovascular disease and the 16% increase in all-cause mortality for people who mostly sit. And this is, again, in a relatively healthy population.
Right.
We also have the medical and health costs of the musculoskeletal issues that we see, the back pain, the neck pain, the hip and knee pain from being sedentary.
Well, I'm thinking about our population here in Wisconsin with our BMI around 43 or 44%, as opposed to the other.
Right.
I'm thinking that walking or doing anything is going to be better and is going to have some usefulness, unlike it didn't seem to be the case in the other study.
Absolutely. And again, this was a different population, but they did look at different levels of physical activity.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, it was self-reported physical activity. So if I were to generalize, I would say that most people would self-report that they're more active than they actually are.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. So I would think that the data is actually stronger than it might seem here in terms of the self-reported leisure time physical activity.
So what should the average Wisconsin person be doing in terms of who is sitting, has to sit?
I think this goes beyond just what the average person should do and what society should do and what large organizations should do. So if you work for a very large company and a lot of your workforce is required to sit, why not implement an exercise class at lunchtime or allow them time to go exercise in the middle of the day at your facility, a variety of ways, you know, don't charge them time off, whatever, something like that, to encourage them to exercise. And what you'll see, I think, is that their healthcare costs, if you're also paying for their healthcare, would go down. So I think it's a way to incentivize perhaps bigger organizations and companies to look at what they're doing to encourage physical activity, because ultimately it will help them with their health care costs.
And maintain employees. They'll have happier
Absolutely.
Employees and probably more productive employees
Absolutely.
Because they're healthier. They're potentially more alert after Sure. getting up and moving, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. I'm still thinking of those who aren't working, but who are mm-hmm. sitting mm-hmm. as much as somebody who is working all day.
So you're talking about the person who's not working, but basically sitting all day.
Maybe
retired. Yeah. Well, again, we need to figure out a way to reach those people to get them to be a bit more active. And sometimes they have, you know, musculoskeletal issues. So that's where they come to physical therapy. We help them, you know, I say essentially dig them out of that hole that they're in, get them to be more active, and get exercise and activity to be part of a sustainable lifestyle. So, you know, one of my primary goals with patients that I see, particularly if they are not regular exercisers, is to help them find something that they enjoy, that they can do, that is sustainable after they discontinue physical therapy. So if I can make somebody who was previously not exercised a lifetime exerciser, that's probably the best thing I can do for their health in general.
And along those lines, so that's such a good point, Lori, and I agree with you completely. Finding, know thyself, as Lori always says, what makes you happy? Is it exercising in a group? Is it exercising alone? Is it being outside? Are you more compliant if you're inside? The other thing I think we have to think about is there's a whole generation of women who grew up before Title IX. Exercise, physical activity was not socially acceptable. And so there's a whole cohort of women out there in their upper 60s to low 70s who grew up not knowing that exercise was a positive, good thing, welcomed, et cetera. So finding that cohort in particular, a gym or an activity or a group where they feel welcomed and they know it's okay to exercise and how to exercise is really important.
Lori Tyne-Brody, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, our guest today as we talk physical therapy. We've zeroed in a bit on sitting and what you may or what you may do to kind of help the cause along if you are in a position where you have to sit all day, or even if you're not in that position, but do it anyway. There's things that need to be done, and we'll talk some more about that, but we have some callers online with questions, and we'll be taking those questions next. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 or email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Coming up at 12:30 today, we'll talk about how people perceive and give meaning to color. Karen Schloss, an associate professor of cognition in UW-Madison's Department of Psychology and the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery, will be our guest then. Right now, Lori and Jill with us to talk physical therapy issues. And again, you can join us at 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. And let's turn to Rick in Monona. Rick, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Thanks a lot for the program. It's kind of connected to sitting. For the last several months, I've had an issue with my left hip. And I noticed what happens is when I just came back from a car trip yesterday where I was sitting for 8 hours or so. And when I get out of the car to get gas or something, my left hip really hurts. But it's only for 30 seconds while I stretch it out, 30 or 40 seconds. And then when I walk, it's painless. But when I, and the same thing happens when I, if I sit on the couch for a long time, I get up and my left hip really, it just takes like 30 seconds or so for me to stand up, move a little bit, and then the pain goes away. Now, I'm 78, I'm retired, and I'm somebody that exercises regularly. When I bike, for example, it doesn't hurt at all. So it's really got me puzzled. I'm wondering if this is the beginning of a hip replacement, or do I have some of the issue going on?
Well, it sounds to me, anytime you have hip pain, the first thing we always think about is this coming from your back? And this still sounds very hip-ish to me. This sounds very joint-specific. So, you know, Rick, it sounds like you're very active. Biking is a great activity for lower extremity joints because it moves your synovial fluid around within the joint, which is a really good thing. It kind of gives that articular cartilage a bath, as we talk about. Sitting in a for a prolonged period of time, sitting on the couch and then getting up and having that 30 seconds of stiffness sounds to me like it might be just a little bit of maybe early onset osteoarthritis. I think personally, with the activity level you have, you are very far away from a total hip. I think what you're closer to is maybe seeing a physical therapist to get some recommended suggestions for activities or strengthening exercises, things along those lines.
Yep, I agree. This doesn't sound anything like you need a hip replacement. It could be a little bit of your piriformis muscle that you're sitting on. If you keep your wallet in that pocket, that would be an issue that would be easily resolvable. But I think seeing a physical therapist for one or two visits and have them take a look at it and see if there's some underlying issue that's easily resolved with a stretching program or a specific hip strengthening program is going to keep you on your way. And the next thing is, don't sit for so long, you know,
right.
And it used to be like we would get up every commercial and, you know, go to the bathroom or go get a glass of water or something. So now with streaming, sometimes you have to stop it and make yourself get up and go do something. So moving more often is going to be helpful for that hip as well.
I always tell people the analogy of a stiff hip is like having a cold car in the state of Wisconsin in December, and you go to start the car and it's a little slow to get going, but once you're warmed up, it runs just fine. Same thing happens with your joints. So kind of think about it that way, Rick, and so moving it more often will be better.
Rick, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Colleen emailed to ask if there's any advice for truckers who sit for many hours at a time.
I think trucking and airline pilots are a cohort of people that come to mind where it becomes very, very challenging because there is very few opportunities to move around a lot.
Same with bus drivers. You know,
if you're
an Uber driver or you're a delivery driver, you have the opportunity to get out and move. And I know with truckers, you're on a time schedule. And the faster you go, the sooner you get from point A to point B, you're required to make those deadlines. So it's really tough. I would try to move as much as I can in my truck. I don't know if you have the ability to shift around and change your position. The other thing you can do is you can do some isometric muscle strengthening by simply tightening muscles. And you can probably find videos for this where you practice tightening muscles from in your toes and then the top of your ankle, the bottom of your ankle, inside, outside, and you work your way all the way up to your neck and shoulders. So you can work in some muscle activation while you're sitting as a possibility.
That is a very difficult population.
Yeah, it is. Irene in Janesville will give you a chance now. Hi, Irene.
Hello. I'm 84 years old, and in February, I broke my hip on my back, the T11 vertebrae. I have been in wheelchairs off and on since then, with some walking toward the end. And I'm hoping to get out of the wheelchair fairly soon. I've had physical therapists come to my house. Mm-hmm. I've done the side-by-side walking against a counter, butt kicks, and all kinds of different things. But I'm concerned when I get back into my walker how I'm going to be doing for a whole day. And do you have some exercises I could do that would be back into my walker and then get me into a cane?
Mm-hmm. So those things are all going to happen gradually. So it's not like, okay, today you're done with your wheelchair, now you're going to a walker. You're going to gradually wean into that, where you'll use your walker, for example, around your home for short periods of time. Or if you're going out for an appointment, you might use a walker on the way in and a wheelchair on the way out if you're fatigued, depending upon the distance you have to travel. And the same thing with the transition from the walker to the cane. So your mm-hmm. physical therapist, and you're not done with PT once they stop at home, you will right. then go to outpatient physical therapy, and they will continue to work with you and make sure that you're safe and ready to start on the walker. A pool would be a wonderful place for you to exercise as well, because it's going to offload some of your body weight, and it's going to give you resistance to all the muscles underwater as you're walking and moving. So, you know, asking for a referral to exercise in the pool with a physical therapist supervision would also be a great way to keep you moving forward and getting you back out of the wheelchair, onto the walker, and onto a cane.
Good luck, Irene. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's turn to Mary in Eau Claire next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thank you. Boy, that was quick. I have a couple things I'm thinking about. One is about exercising on a chair with some other elderly people, as I am elderly. But I went into my primary care physician the other day, and I told her that something weird happened. I tried to do some, and I've done a lot of exercise all my life, and I tried to do a little bit of yoga. I've been quiet because it's been taking a long time getting back in shape, you know. And so I thought I would do some yoga. And you know how you put your knees down to the floor, and you know, when you're sitting down, mm-hmm. and or you get in that position. Well, I tried to do that with my right knee, and I couldn't do it with either knee, to tell you the truth. But the right knee, I couldn't do it at all.
Oh,
I couldn't
okay.
even move it down.
Yep, yep.
And so I told my primary care physician that, and she gave me an X-ray. And she came and told me that she was really sorry, but there were ways to fix it, and that I didn't have a hip anymore, and that you know, I needed a hip replacement on that side, on my right side. And this didn't alarm me as much, I suppose, it would mostly, because I have two brothers who also have osteoarthritis, and I do. And
all right. Well, that it's not unusual, Mary, if you have not sat down on the floor and sat in that sort of crisscross applesauce position for a long time. your joints and your muscles will accommodate to your usual activity level. So if you have not put your hips and knees in that position for a long time, you will lose mobility in that range. It doesn't mean that you can't reacquire that. And the arthritis didn't happen overnight. I would request a referral to physical therapy and have them give you some things to do to start to regain some of your mobility and see how you do. I didn't hear from you that you were having a lot of pain,
right,
or a lot of limitations in your activity. So from where we sit, you don't go in and have a joint replacement if you're not in pain and having a limitation in your functional activities. So I think a referral to physical therapy would be a better first step to help you regain some motion in your hips and knees, regain some strength, and see where you're at.
And you also had a question about seated exercises or chair exercises, a chair exercise program. These are wonderful. I know a lot of gyms do these, and it's a great way to strengthen your lower extremities as well as your upper extremities. The downside is there's no opportunity to kind of work on your balance. And we know that as we age, one of our greatest risks of injury is due to falls. And so if a chair exercise class could be complemented potentially with like a pool exercise program or something like that, that gets you upright and helps you work on your balance, that's a great strategy if you're able to do that. If you're not able to do that and chair exercises is really the safest thing for you, then indeed that is wonderful. Great.
Isn't there something called chair dancing?
Probably.
I'm sure there is. There's chair yoga and chair. Yep. I have no doubt that someone has invented that. That'd be a great idea.
Mary, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Barbara in Beloit, we'll go to you now. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, good morning. I've had a problem recently that especially my left knee will start to lock when I'm going downstairs. It's not always predictable. It just kind of happens. I do have bone spurs and that kind of thing, but I'm wondering what this might signal.
So do you feel that locking is right under your kneecap, Barbara, or do you feel like it's deep within your joint? Can you tell?
You know what? I'm not completely sure. I think it's not, quote, deep necessarily.
Okay.
It's just, you know.
Right.
Uh-huh. Right. So it could be patellofemoral pain. It could be just, you know, you talked about some bone spurs. You could have a little bit of wearing away of the undersurface of your kneecap. And as we go downstairs, if that kneecap isn't tracking properly, the kneecap can kind of butt up to either side of your femur or your thigh bone. And so muscle weakness can be a contributing factor. Hip weakness may be a contributing factor. Flexibility could be a contributing factor. And I think all those things could be addressed by a physical therapist. And you're in Beloit, so you should be able to maybe access a physical therapist there. And you had mentioned both knees, so it's probably good to get both of them looked at.
Yeah, and Jill's absolutely right. That was the first thing that came to my mind. And sometimes just a few exercises and looking at your mechanics of descending the stairs. And we can correlate this with athletes and how they land from a jump. And that we see a lot of hip weakness that results in poor alignment of the knee when they land, which is really the same kind of mechanism as descending the stairs. So a few simple exercises to work on hip strengthening, as well as awareness of the relationship between your foot, knee, and hip when you go down the stairs can really help with this problem.
Yeah. Good luck, Barbara. Thank you very much for calling. By the way, you can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or email to talk at WPR.org. Cheryl in Merrimack will give you a chance now. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. I've had osteoarthritis for a long time. Of course, it's getting worse as I get older.
And at the end of May, I had a pain flare up in my left knee, got an x-ray, and they said it was bone on bone. So now I have an appointment to see an ortho specialist on June 25th. So in the meantime, I'm kind of checking out what my options might be. And one that has come up is this injection of something called Synvisc,
yep,
which is, I guess it recreates some of the padding between the knee. Do you have any experience? Do you recommend it?
We have some experience with it, as does Larry.
As does Larry. Go, Larry.
Well, maybe we'll talk a little bit about it first, and then Larry can share his experiences with you, too. So, you know, arthritic changes, bone on bone, we hate to hear those kind of things. But as Lori would say, you know, you need to consider your how many days are good days and how many days are bad days in the big picture when you make a decision. If you have not seen a physical therapist, that would absolutely be your lowest hanging fruit and the first line of defense. So seeing a physical therapist to see what exercises would be appropriate for you, knowing what your knee is like, would be very helpful. The next line of defense I would consider would be the hyaluronic acid injections. The brand name that you mentioned is called Synvisc. Orthovisc is another one. And as you mentioned, it does help kind of with your articular cartilage or the padding between your knees. Research has supported it for the use of knee pain, not as much in the hip. When it originally came out, it was a series of 3 to 5 injections, and now things have changed quite a bit. Can be from 1 to 3 injections before people start seeing relief. And perhaps, Larry, maybe you want, Lori's going to say something, and then
I'll
Larry
say something.
Can tell
I'll hand it off to Larry. So you said you had a pain flare in May. I didn't hear a history of knee problems before that. So typically, we want to start with the least invasive intervention first when you first enter the medical system with a problem. So, you know, if you would say, oh, it's been 2 or 3 years and we've tried this and that and we're sort of midstream in the care of your knee, that's one thing. But you're just, it sounds like you're just entering the medical system. So we really like to start with the least invasive. And as Jill said, that's usually physical therapy first. And then it's and potentially an injection. So Larry's had this.
Yeah, I did some physical therapy first on my knee.
Oh, well, there you go.
And then there was, the discussion was to have some surgery. And but first, the doctor said, let's try Synvisc. So I did 3 shots over a period of time. I've forgotten now how many weeks went by. But about 2 weeks before my surgery, I called and said, my knee is fine. I don't need the surgery. And I, you know, that's what? At least 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah, it's been a long time.
Been a long time, and I haven't needed any more help for the knee. So it
can
work.
And you've been able to maintain your activity level. So you will continue to be very active, Larry. So you're a jogger, a golfer, do some strength training, things like that. So the injection probably got you just a little bit over that hump of that flare-up that you could continue with your activity.
Yeah, I certainly recommend it. Would recommend it. Although, as like anything else, it's not everybody is going to have the same impact that I had, for sure.
Right.
Cheryl, there you go. Thank you so much for calling.
Let us know how you do.
Yeah, please do. Nick in Green Bay, we'll go to you. Nick, what's on your mind?
Hey, I've got a question for you. I'm 52 years old, and when I was like 12 years old, me and my brother were playing football. A couple days before Christmas, I kicked the wall, and for some reason, the wall didn't move. 9 of my bones did, and they all broke. And they did an x-ray, God, it's got to be like 5 years ago, and they said I got an ankle of a 70-year-old.
Okay.
And my question for you is, I like to take my black lab for a walk every day, but then by the time Friday comes along, my ankle is about 3 times the size that it should be. And I try and ice it and heat it, and it doesn't change anything. And I was wondering what I could do to hopefully keep my walks and stuff.
Well, that's tough because it sounds like you have some pretty significant osteoarthritis in that ankle. So did you fractured bones in your foot and ankle or farther up at age 12?
They just said in my ankle.
Okay.
And they also said that I got bones floating around yet.
Loose bodies, yeah.
Some loose bodies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the things that we tell people are maintain your body weight, wear good shoes that have good support. You might try a pull-on ankle sleeve to give some additional stability and some compression, which may help with the swelling, as well as icing and elevating at the after each walk. And Jill wants to say something. I can tell by looking at her.
Yeah, the challenge with the ankle is it's a very tight, congruent joint. So there's not a lot of place for swelling to go. If you have a little bit of loose bodies or spurs floating around there, it can cause some pinching. So that's probably why you see all the swelling in your ankle, because there's really nowhere for it to go. The other thing I would consider, first of all, I think seeing a physical therapist for a couple of visits, I think he'd probably benefit from some distraction and maybe a little bit of mobilization at that joint, things that Nick could do at home. The other thing they may recommend is a rocker bottom shoe, so you don't have to use your ankle as much, because now we're going to kind of send that load up to your knee, and we don't want you to have knee and hip pain. So I would see a physical therapist that specializes in, like, an orthopedic specialist that potentially specializes in ankle and foot pathology. And as Lori said, you want to wear good shoes, but they may recommend a shoe where you don't have to move your ankle as much for prolonged walking, to only use, for example, when you walk your dog.
Yeah. Nick, there you go. Good luck with that. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at physical therapy issues today with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Great to have them back. And we have many callers online, so let's go to the phones. And Fran in Rockford, Illinois. It's your turn. Hi, Fran.
Hello, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Yeah, see, I was just going to make a comment that there is such thing as a dance fitness class from a chair. It's called Zumba Gold. Zumba has a lot of formats, and the Zumba Gold is specifically for active older adults that need kind of a modified low-impact exercise. And anyone that's properly licensed for that particular format can teach it from standing or in a chair. And then we also, as Zumba instructors, some of us can teach Aqua Zumba as well. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Oh, love it. I love it.
Thank you, Fran.
Thank you. I love it. So it is chair dancing. It's Zumba. It's a variation of Zumba. Great.
Yeah. Appreciate it very much, Fran. Thank you for calling. Lisa in Middleton, we'll give you a chance to join in now. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm going on this kind of a long car ride, like 6 hours long, and then at the end of it, I'm going to be on this bike ride that goes all the way across Iowa, and I'm going to be sitting on my bike for a really long time, like hours during the day. And I'm just, you know, that you were talking about sitting and how it can affect you. Well, is sitting while biking, I mean, does it cancel each other out?
100%, Lisa. Sitting on a bike because you're physically active cancels out that sitting. And I believe the bike ride you're referring to is Ragbri. And I can guarantee you, Lisa, you won't be sitting on your bike for more than 12 or 15 miles, and you will get off and have pie.
That's right. That's right. She's riding
but it's
with
a great
Jill
question.
And I.
Yeah, she's riding with it. She's right. She's on our team. But it's a great question.
Yeah,
of is sitting, for example, and biking, or sitting and kayaking, or sitting and rowing, do those things offset? And indeed, if you're sitting to do a physical cardiovascular activity, I think the cardiovascular activity would negate the sitting.
Those activities are considered leisure time physical activity. So they fall into the activity category, not the sitting category. So they're talking specifically about sedentary sitting or sitting at work, which is generally physically sedentary.
Right.
Yeah. But it's a great point.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people with balance impairments and things like that, that there are a lot of options for cardiovascular activity. activity that you can sit and do. And the Zumba Gold is a perfect example. Rowing on a rowing machine is a perfect example. Lori has one of those. Mm-hmm. Kayaking, all of those things would be considered physical activity, even though you are sitting.
Yeah.
There you go, Lisa. Thanks for calling. Let's turn to Dot in Manitowoc. Hi, Dot.
Hi, good morning. I would like to make a comment. I have the bathroom of my house upstairs and bedrooms upstairs. But what I do when I go downstairs, I hang on to my railings. I have railings on each side of the wall, and I hope that makes a difference in some of the exercises.
Oh, absolutely. For people who are forced to use stairs during their day, that is a great way to build in activity. So, for example, I have moved my office now downstairs. So I go up and down the stairs all the time. I'll go down to my office and then I'll say, oh, geez, I forgot my water bottle. Back up the stairs, back down the stairs. So creating a space in your house where it forces you to move more often makes perfect sense. So, and I think for you, Dot, having those railings on both sides increases your safety.
Right.
Absolutely. Dot, thanks for calling. Mary in Cleveland, Wisconsin. Your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a question about pinched nerves in the back. Mm-hmm. I have one. My sister has one, or she had surgery. I had PT and a cortisone shot. Our dad didn't, but he had sisters who had back issues. And mm-hmm. we wondered if back issues like that are congenital.
So approximately 65% of your connective tissue is inherited. So probably. So you really do inherit some of the characteristics of your family members. You look at height, you look at hair color, eye color, those things. There's no reason to think some of the connective tissue wouldn't be inherited.
But having said that, you can still, as Lori said, a big factor of it is hereditary, but you can still offset those things with exercise, mobility exercises, things like that. But yeah, a little bit of it is how you picked your parents, as Lori likes to say.
Right. For example, I said to my mom one day, do you have a hammer toe on the second toe on your right foot? And she said, why, yes, I do. I was like, thanks a lot.
Oh, Mary, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. And now we have some open lines that we can get you on pretty quickly at 800-642-1234. Give us a call with your question relating to physical therapy. 800-642-1234 or email to talk@WPR.org. Sherry in Oshkosh emailed us to say that in the early 2000s, Sherry started to develop serious neck problems. Sherry had to have a C4 to C6 discectomy and fusion at age 53, probably the result of many years of working at a computer and wearing glasses.
Mm. So it sounds to me like she had a multi-level discectomy, maybe with or without a fusion where they actually fuse those levels. And if that is indeed the case, what happens above and below those levels is over time, you kind of use those joints right above and below excessively to make up for the lack of motion where they fused you, and you can actually start getting some wear and tear there. So this is a really good example of making sure that your computer station, your work environment is set up really appropriately. If you need specific glasses for a computer, for example, I need glasses for like the bifocals to read. And so I actually have a pair of computer glasses that are my entire prescription for that. Otherwise, you're constantly looking through your bifocals and you're straining your neck and tilting your neck into extension. So those kind of factors would be important to consider for somebody who does have to sit all day at work and look at a computer.
Yeah, I was curious that she said that she thought her neck problems were due to sitting and her glasses. So I wondered how the glasses came into play, but you're absolutely right. And as you have noted in the past, for people who use a laptop, the keyboard and the screen don't allow you to be in a good position. If you're in a decent position for your upper body, your shoulders, and your hands and the keyboard, you're not in an optimal position for your neck and your vision with the screen. So those are factors that have to be considered and try to come up with some solution that works for wrist, hand, shoulder, neck, and eyes.
And I have three screens in front of me right now as we speak.
There you go.
And I also have my phone out, too, with so.
But, Larry, your neck looks really good. You're in a good, your computer screens are in a good position. Your neck is in a relatively good position. So you have a good ergonomic setup. And I think what's hard is when the pandemic hit, a lot of people started working from home. They had a good setup similar to what you have at work, but then went home and started working on laptops.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I keep my microphone high.
Yeah.
So that my head has to go up to the microphone.
That's right. Like Jill's classic for setting your mirror in your car. She loves this one, and that is you get in the car and you assume the very best posture that you can, and you adjust your mirror to that. So if you start to slouch, you go to look in your mirror and you can't see it, you know you're slouching.
I went on a 1,403-mile trip by car a few weeks back to Canada to a golf course where we played a golf tournament.
That's dedication.
And then played six rounds of golf in 6 days.
Wow.
And a round is 18 holes, right, Larry?
18 holes. The course was about, according to Matt, my run, it was about 7 miles.
Wow.
Long, so a fairly long course for me.
Yeah.
So 1,400 miles, how many hours was that, Larry, and how often did you stop? Did you have kind of some scheduled stops so you could get out and stretch?
We just stopped for gas, but we had scheduled 2 nights of sleep along the way.
Right. Okay.
Great.
All right. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, that makes sense. Having the ability to do that is important. If you're a truck driver, you don't get to do that. So
yeah, it was a long trip though.
Yeah. Well, then to get out of the car and play that much golf.
I flew back.
There you go.
Oh man, Nancy and Amory, have you got a quick question for us?
Yeah, I just had carpal tunnel surgery on my right hand, and I was told by my physical therapist that both hands, my thumbs have gotten weak, so I don't have the muscle pad like on your palm, you know, where I should. And I'm just wondering, are there exercises to strengthen thumbs? I don't imagine that's a common question.
Absolutely. And that is something that your physical therapist or your certified hand therapist, whoever you're seeing for your post-carpal tunnel surgery, should provide you. So you're exactly right, Nancy. The median nerve, which gets entrapped in your carpal tunnel, innervates the thumb side of your hand. So your thumb, your index finger, and part of your middle finger. And so one of the classic signs we see when somebody has carpal tunnel syndrome is atrophy or wasting of those big thumb muscles. So to give you some very specific precision or prehension training for those muscles would be very important. And it'll take time.
Yeah. And I'm sure your hand therapist, you know, mentioned to you, you know, the weakness in the thumb and so on, just mentioned that in passing, but is completely on top of that in terms of restoring the strength there. That's probably one of their number one goals in your plan of care.
There you go, Nancy. Thank you so much for calling. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program, our guests today. And we are going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and we will be back. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining in today. Physical therapy is on our minds today here on WPR News for the next half hour or so. Larry Mueller here. Our physical therapist, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, and Lori Tyne-Brody as our guests today. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments as we move along today. The number's 800-642-1234. You could email to talk at WPR.org. And let's take a few emails. Can email to ask you to talk about the multi-skeletal effects of menopause, joints, frozen shoulder, and bone health. Do you need a specific physical therapist if you're diagnosed with osteopenia?
Well, those are great questions.
Yes. So I'll start with the sort of muscular and joint issues, and I'll let you jump on the bone because you love that stuff. I do too, but still. So anyway, as we reach menopause, we have a change, obviously, in our hormonal status. And we also, at the same time, are experiencing the aging effects on our joints and our muscles. Women more susceptible to frozen shoulder, more susceptible after menopause. They're not exactly sure why, but somehow related to hormonal status. We definitely begin to lose strength and mobility because of that change in the hormone status after menopause, which makes it really important to engage in ongoing, regular physical exercise. The most important is the loss of strength that we see that declines precipitously after menopause, and that can have profound effects on our ability to get down and up on the floor, our ability to sustain and hold our upright posture in a good position to offload our joints and to offload our bones. So really important. It affects really every connective tissue in your body, and most of your body is made up of liquids and connective tissue.
Right. And another thing along the musculoskeletal line is gluteal tendinopathy. We see a lot of gluteal tendinopathy in postmenopausal women, which impacts hip and loading and weight bearing and walking and all of those things. And then Ken's other question had to do with osteopenia, which is so bone loss is on a spectrum, and osteopenia is the first phase of bone loss, if you will, before you get into osteoporosis. And there are specific standard deviations away from normal that make the definition of osteopenia and osteoporosis. And as we know, when we lose those hormones postmenopausally, we do see an acceleration in bone loss, or we can see. Hormone replacement therapy is one option. And I also definitely think, I think one of Ken's questions was seeing a physical therapist to help with this. And that is a really important strategy to make sure that bone health is maintained. Strengthening bone really occurs across a spectrum of intensity, and you can load too little and the bone will not respond. You can load too much and end up with musculoskeletal pain, things like that. Your bone constantly needs to be stimulated in different ways. So in other words, if you've ever seen my sister at the high school track in her town where she lives, yeah, you will see her not just walking forward or running forward, but you'll see her doing grapevine and karaoke and walking backwards and skipping and hopping and things like that, because your bone wants to be stimulated new all the time. It wants to be stimulated differently, all of those things. So to answer Ken's very good, poignant question is, seeing a physical therapist who specializes in orthopedics, or if the individual has some sort of pelvic floor dysfunction with their hormonal changes like stress, urinary incontinence, things like that, you could also see a women's health specialist. So I think thinking about the conditions you want to address most will help you, but most orthopedic certified or orthopedic clinical specialists would be able to address all those questions that Ken had.
Roseanne emailed to say she could hardly walk after a long car trip. Solve the problem by putting the seat of a wooden kitchen seat minus the leg and back, the legs and back, on her car seat. It fixed the problem, and Roseanne feels the bucket seats somehow roll your hips. They have the same issue with their easy chair.
Absolutely. Some of the bucket seats tend to roll you in to internally rotate your hips and don't allow you to be in an optimal position. I'm still not clear on the kitchen seat thing minus the back legs.
So she just took the flat part and put it there so she wasn't in a bucket anymore and she was flat.
Oh, I get that, but I thought she... But what happened to the front legs?
Well, she took all the legs off.
Oh, took all the legs off. For some reason, I only heard the back legs. I'm like, how does that work with still the front legs?
Man, no, she made her unbucket seat. Now, Laura, you're not having a good day. She
I'm
made
not
her
having a good day.
Seat.
Clearly
she made
need
her bucket
more coffee.
Seat a non-unbucket seat.
Yep. You could do that a number of ways. You could take a towel and fill in the space. You don't have to disassemble your kitchen furniture necessarily. But I love where she went with that, Roseanne. Well done.
Yeah.
What's the difference, John wants to know, between moderate and vigorous intensity?
Oh, okay.
Well, it depends on who you ask.
Yeah, exactly. There are standards for that. And I'm kind of going to look to see if they define that. Oh, they used a standardized tool. Yeah. So metabolic equivalence. Do you remember what the, metabolic. So inactive, less than 3.75 met hours per week. So to go between high is between 16 and 25. So say around 20 hours per week or 60 to 89 minutes per day. And very high was greater than 90 minutes per day.
So 45 was the moderate or low?
So let me go back to this. Less than 15 minutes a day was inactive. Low was 15 to 29 minutes per day. Medium was 30 to 59 minutes per day. So just stop for a minute and think about that. Medium activity is basically 30 to an hour a day. High is 60 to 89 or 60 to 90 minutes per day. And very high is greater than 90 minutes per day. That's a lot of time being active. And that's leisure time physical activity. That's not standing at your kitchen sink.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know if you're in a family situation.
Oh,
it's very difficult. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So if you have small children, things like that, it's a jogging stroller, potentially getting a 30-minute jog in. Mm-hmm. It's a bike
with a trailer
on the back, things like that. So, no, it's a point well taken, Larry. It's a very hard thing to fit into a lifestyle if you're a full-time working parent. Completely understand. I think considering a gym membership that has childcare may be a helpful option as well.
Yeah. So I know it's harder in Wisconsin because of the weather, but when I'm on the bike trail, I see people who are biking with their kids on the back of the bike early in the morning as if they are biking their children to childcare.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's a wonderful way to emphasize the importance of physical activity to your children.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I see it on campus a lot, too. There's a couple childcare centers on campus, and there's a couple women I see on bikes with. One lady has her bike, and then she has a tag-along, and then she has a trailer. So, you know, she's, you know, very long, and by God, she's doing it every day, and it's amazing. So, yeah, so I think it sends your kids a really good message as well.
Yeah, but it's not easy.
No,
we
it's
will,
not.
We will let John know it is not easy.
Absolutely.
But anything worthwhile, right?
Yeah.
You know, like they say.
Amy in South Phillips has a question relating to activity, I believe. Let's go there. Amy, hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm in a car, so and I'm negotiating around a semi right now. So I do a lot of gardening and yard work, and I'm 58, and I get a lot of lower back pain or just stiffness afterward. So I try to vary my position, sitting and kneeling, and sometimes a gardening chair. But I've noticed that it really makes my back feel better if when I'm leaning over, I put one elbow on one knee. Mm-hmm. It just takes a lot of strain off of my lower back, and but yet you're not perfectly straight when you're doing that. So I'm hoping is that a good thing to do? If it feels good and varying the position, I would think is a good thing.
All brilliant strategies. And so, yeah. So for example, if you're standing and you're leaning over and placing your hands on the counter, you are offloading your spine to some extent. The same thing is true if you are kneeling and you put an elbow on a knee, if you're sitting and you lean forward and put your elbows on your knees. Those are all ways to unload your back. So absolutely, varying your position is going to be super important, as well as varying your task. So how you use your muscles in a task. So, you know, you may do a little bit of digging and then you may stand up and do something that's walking and then maybe come back and finish whatever you were doing with your digging. So instead of, you know, how we are start and finish a task, you may start a task, do part of it, and then switch to a different activity that requires a different position and then go back to finish the first activity, or sit down and have a cup of coffee and take a small 5-7 minute break and then go back to it. All those things are going to be strategies to prolong the life of your back.
Mm-hmm. Ellie in Madison emailed, here's something I don't know that we've covered before. Is there such a thing as facial muscle PT? Ellie's in her late 20s, deals mm-hmm. with chronic facial pain due to clenching. Are there exercises Ellie can do to alleviate this? The only thing that's worked for Ellie is Botox to the masseters, but yeah. That is off-label and very expensive.
Yes. So, Ellie, there is help for you. The masseter muscle is the muscle when you clench your teeth that pops out on the side of your jaw. So it sounds to me like Ellie's condition is probably coming from her TMJ, or it's a temporal mandibular disorder. And there are physical therapists who specialize in this. There's two or three cranial facial certified therapists in the state of Wisconsin. There's a couple in Madison. So she should just call wherever her insurance is and ask to see the therapist that specializes in TMJ or TMD. And there are people within, for example,
Madison. Madison.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's two or three really good people in Madison. So she just needs to make some phone calls and check. And if she has any questions, she can certainly leave her name and we can give her some contact information.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is one of the most painful, debilitating musculoskeletal conditions, and most people don't know that physical therapists can treat it. So absolutely.
Well, apparently not, because she must be in the medical system if she's getting Botox injections, and I'm surprised nobody has referred her to physical therapy at this point.
Well, she could be getting Botox off-label, like in a
she said it's off-label and very expensive.
Yeah. right.
So, yeah, okay. But give PT a try.
Jordan emailed to say, wondering who they can see for finding well-fitting walking running shoes. Jordan has developed pain in one heel that eventually shoots up the hip the longer they are on their feet. Can you recommend stretches or exercises to relieve the pain?
Well, it really depends upon the source of his pain. So typically, pain goes from proximal to distal, so from the hip or back down the leg. So for it to go from his heel and then up to his hip suggests to me that Jordan is changing how they move, which is creating a secondary problem at the hip. So I would start with a physical therapist to find the source of the problem in the foot. So, for example, if Jordan is doing the same things with each foot, which most people do, unless you're in a job where you stand on one leg for long periods of time, I can't think of one, but someone will call in with that suggestion. But anyway, you would expect Jordan to have the similar symptoms on both sides. So the question is, why is Jordan having problems in one heel shooting up to one hip and not the other? So thus, an examination by a physical therapist to determine the origin of the pain in the foot will help. And you can't just say this shoe or that shoe, because the cause of the pain in the foot is different for everybody. So one person may need a shoe with a straight last. Someone else may need a shoe with an arch support. Someone may need a shoe with a heel lift. So one or two visits should be able to sort through things for Jordan.
Becky and Ryo will give you a chance. Hi, Becky.
Hi. I have a lot of lower back pain from the arthritis in my lower back, and I'm wondering about cold laser therapy. If that's a physical therapy you've heard of, or is it only done through chiropractors? What do you know about it?
So, yes, cold laser therapy, or I believe it's called a class 4 laser, is something that physical therapists can use. I am not familiar if there's strong evidence supporting its use specifically for low back pain. Having said that, Becky, some physical therapists will use it in a very multifaceted plan of care. So I wouldn't just get cold laser therapy treatment, a passive treatment in and of itself. And if you would see a physical therapist, they may use it, but it would be in addition to manual therapy, mobilization, a home exercise program, things like that. And I think part of the reason that we don't have good evidence necessarily with lasers and things like that is because physical therapists, as a general rule, do not use those modalities in isolation. Mm-hmm. So it's usually part of a multifaceted plan of care.
And the same is true for other disciplines, whether it's a chiropractor or some other health professional, they rarely use something like a laser in isolation. So when they do the research on it, it's always, well, we used laser, but we also did these three other things. So to be able to sort out how much of the laser contributed to the outcome is really unknown.
Gail in Wapaka has something for us. Hi, Gail.
Hello. Actually, I'm driving. After my knee replacement surgeries, I use a stationary bike at our fitness center, and it has different levels of, it goes into different levels of strength, and it seemed to help a lot with my knee replacement recovery, but I'm wondering, is this a good thing to help with my back? My back seems to get weak after standing, walking a distance. Is this a good exercise?
Absolutely. Is it a recumbent bike or an upright bike?
I think it's a recumbent bike.
So you're sitting back and leaning back and biking?
Biking is a great exercise for overall strength, mobility, etc. I think in terms of your back, it would be useful to add some other things that actually loaded your back or use the muscles in your back a bit more, because in a recumbent, your back is really fully supported. So even in an upright bike, you have to do a little bit more balancing and weight bearing on your hands, which is going to engage your core a little bit more. So I absolutely think the bike is a great idea, but I would also want to add some specific strengthening exercises for your core muscles in addition to the bike.
I think the bike will do a great job with her glutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gail, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Jim emailed, is there a connection between being sedentary and your mental health?
Oh, well, that's a really good question.
How much time do we have left?
Exactly. I would say that that's probably the case, but I have not examined that literature.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what comes first?
Yeah.
Right, right.
Does poor mental health cause you to become sedentary? Are you more sedentary? Or which comes first? I don't know that we can say cause and effect as much as perhaps an association.
Yeah.
Would probably what the literature demonstrates. But it's a great question. Yeah.
Well, and it's probably hard to study because we don't know what people are doing when they're sitting. You know, right. Are you doing crossword puzzles or are you just doing something passive, just watching Netflix? Right.
Emily in Madison has a question. Hi, Emily.
Hi, I had a trampoline park accident where I fractured my talus, both my sesamoid bones, and my first toe joint.
Ouch.
And I've had a few, and torn ligaments, and I've had a few surgeries to repair. My most recent was in March. But I'm having foot pain when I walk, and I'm still in PT. But I'm wondering if I need to see, like, a foot specialist, and it's kind of my timeline. This happened last June. If my timeline is having my most recent surgery in March is, like, still appropriate. I know that it's, like, unique. I had a surgery on the toe joint and then on my ankle.
Yeah. Actually, I'm seeing somebody in a very similar situation who had surgery recently, as did you, and I'm seeing them in the pool. So I would absolutely say that you should continue with your PT. The pool would be a great place for you to add some exercise without putting so much weight on your foot. So one of the issues with things in the foot, ankle, knee, and hip is that a lot of the exercise is weight bearing or you're sitting. But in the pool, you can do limited weight bearing in a standing position.
And as we talked about that earlier, that a talus fracture is a tough, tough fracture because it's so covered with articular cartilage and it's such an interestingly shaped bone. It does so much. And the congruency with your ankle joint is so tight that, I think you're on a very appropriate timeline. It's a pretty unusual injury, actually.
Yeah.
Emily, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And with that, we are out of time. Lori and Jill, thank you both so much, and we'll look forward to your visit next month.
Awesome. It'll be fun, as always.
As always.
Absolutely.
Lori and Jill, Lori Tynbrody is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill Tyne is a mom professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the science of color, red, yellow, purple, all of them. I'm Larry Mueller.